Hey, Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our new website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Hello, Trojan fans. Welcome to episode number 271 of the Peristyle Podcast. Today is May 20th, 2013. We've got a great show for you this week on the podcast. After taking last week off, I was down under in Australia, but we are back this week. We got Dan Weber coming up a little bit later on. Coach Harvey Hyde in the first segment. We've got a bunch of questions to get to. If you have questions for us, send them in, podcast@uscfootball.com. Or call us, 206-888-6755. Leave a voicemail. And you can also go to peristylepodcast.com. Leave a voicemail right from your computer on the left side of the page. We got Coach Harvey Hyde joining us right away. What's up, Coach? How you doing?
Ryan, I understand you're on secret assignment. That forced me to go on secret assignment, too. So for everyone out there, I hope you're on secret assignment. You have a lot of questions for us because we're raring to go. We had a bye week. So let's get started.
Yeah, we got a bye week and wanted to thank our sponsor, Southern California Tickets, sctickets.com, 1-800-888-7287. If you need tickets for anything here in Southern California or across the nation, concerts, sporting events, you want to go to a theater with your wife or girlfriend, something like that, check it out. I don't know what the local teams have been doing since I've been gone. I don't think it's been very good. I think the Kings have made a comeback, but I don't think baseball's been doing very well locally. But if you want to go see any of those games, you can go to sctickets.com. And they will hook you up. Coach, well, we like to get the short questions in and try to get as many as we can. But this was an interesting topic that we got a couple emails on. So I'm going to try to read. I'm not going to read this whole thing because it's kind of long. It's from the Midnight Rambler. So he rambled on a little bit. While listening to the show in late April, I recall hearing Coach Hyde express his opinion about players being assessed a fee equivalent to a year's tuition and associated costs should they leave school early for the pros. In the case of USC, that would be quite a sum. I disagree with his view as it puts an undue and unfair demand upon the player. If a coach leaves before the end of his contract, the balance is usually bought out by a new team who hires him or the school that has fired him. Either way, no such penalty is paid directly by them. On the flip side, if a school were to dismiss a player for grades or conduct, can that player demand his share of the gate and marketing proceeds that USC received during his time there? It cuts both ways. USC's football team, according to Forbes magazine, made a profit of $29 million in 2011. That said, it's true that the yearly cost of a player's education is $150,000. Then multiplied by 75 scholarship, the total is only about $11.2 million, well under the $29 million the school reportedly made free and clear. The kids get a share at the gate, the concessions, marketing sales, stuff like that. When a kid stays all 4 years and suffers an injury that will last for his rest of his life, what will happen there? And it kind of goes on and on. But you kind of get the idea of what he's talking about there, Coach. Maybe you want to respond to the Midnight Rambler who wrote that. And he says, thanks for reading and fight on. He loves the podcast.
Well, I respect his feelings. You know, we didn't get into the complete package of the other side, and that's what he's doing. And I agree with him a lot on the other side. I think it's not fair when a coach such as, if you remember a few years ago, Dennis Erickson, went up to recruiting day at Oregon State, signed all the players, and then left the next day for the San Francisco 49er job. Now, I think that's misleading. I think every single one of those players should be released. Now, if they still want to go to Oregon State, that's fine. But I think they should be released and then have an opportunity to look at other options. Today, young student athletes go to universities because of the university, but they also go there because of the coach, the coaching staff, the system he runs, and on and on and on. So there's both sides to this. As far as the side I was discussing 2 weeks ago, it was about athletes who come out early. Now let me give you just two examples, and then we'll go to the other side of it. When I was at UNLV, Randall Cunningham was our quarterback, and after his junior year, he came in one day in the afternoon, and they were forming this new United States Football League, and he came in and he said, Coach, I think I'm going to go. I've got an offer. I lost both my parents. We need the money. I think I'm going to leave, and I've had a great time here, and blah, 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 we won. And I said, Randall, I want you to go think about it. And you can imagine my evening. All of a sudden, I have a staff meeting. I say, we got to get somebody else ready. Who does it look like? This is going to happen. It's going to hit the press and all of this and that. Who's out there available to recruit? Because a lot of people didn't want to come because Randall was there, especially a junior college athlete. So the next day, he comes strolling into my office and sits down. And, of course, I'm going to see what he's been doing. And he says to me, Coach, remember what I told you yesterday? I said, yes. He said, I was just kidding you. I said, Randall, I said, I didn't sleep the entire night. We had a staff meeting. He said, Coach, I'm sorry, but, you know, you always fool with us, so I wanted to fool with you. And said, don't ever do that again. So you can see what that does to a coaching staff and a team. And, again, let's take the Mark Sanchez situation. A couple of years ago, Mark Sanchez came out early. And, sure, I don't blame him for coming out early. He made a lot of money, went to New York, good kid, everything went great. But then it put USC in a position they weren't expecting him to come out early. Matt Barkley had to start as a freshman. They had to start over immediately. And it put a lot of stress on Matt and the football program at USC. So I'm saying, yes, you can go out. But I don't think you should use a university as an amateur program where it just gets you ready. When you're ready to go, you leave. Now, you can, but also you can pay back the university for the tuition costs that they spent on you during this period of time. And not only that, Mark Sanchez made enough money that it would be a deduction for him to pay back that money to the university. And in the tax bracket he's in, it'd be a hell of a deal. It would be a donation to the athletic department. Now, of course, if you're an athlete that's not sure if you're going to go in the first round, it gives you an opportunity to think about it a little bit more. Should I really come out? Should I give up this athletic scholarship? Am I going to make enough money, or am I guaranteed to make enough money? And I got to remember I have to pay this back. So it makes a more thinking process for the parents and the athlete before he says, I'm going out. Now, on the other side, I think this gentleman, Midnight Rider, is that what you call him?
Yeah. Midnight Rambler, he said, yeah.
Oh, no, I agree with him. I think that the university makes millions of dollars on these student-athletes, millions of dollars, and they don't really reap the benefits. They've changed a lot of the NCAA requirements now where you can help kids and do different things. Before, you couldn't do anything for a kid. You couldn't send him to a dentist unless it was an athletic injury. You couldn't help a kid go home if his mother passed away. He had to get there on his own or sometimes couldn't even go, but he didn't have the financial means to do that. Well, now the university can assist in different ways to do that. The millions of dollars that are made, they're building all of these facilities. They're paying coaches for $3 million, $2 million, $1 million a year. It's not amateur athletics. It's professional athletics on an amateur level. So I think that the players should be rewarded too, and we talked about that. As far as players who need the money, they should be given money as a loan so that they can live as a normal student on campus and not have to go day to day without any social money or being able to go and buy a shirt or do any of that stuff. I believe that. So it goes both ways. And the marketing, the number one thing I don't like is when they sell their jerseys with their names on them. Now they're using their names and they're selling these jerseys with their names on them or their numbers and making a lot of money. But this is the one that I can't really figure out because they're the most popular jersey. Everybody wants to wear them. In the NFL, the players get money for that. Every jersey that's sold, they get, I think, $10 or $11 per jersey out of $130 or $150 jersey. So there's a lot of abuse, too, to the college athlete. I agree. But there's a lot of good. An opportunity where a young man has an opportunity to get an athletic scholarship and also an academic degree. I'm so happy to see Deion Bailey get his athletic degree as a junior. DJ Morgan, the same thing, just graduated. Hey, that's tremendous to see that. And if they stay and they keep on working, they'll get their MA degree before they move on, like Brandon Hancock and other players have done at USC. But I just like to see a student athlete stay in school, have the college's experiences that he should have, play for that team, not leave his team and move on. But then I do see the opportunity. And if it was my son, would I go out if he was going to get $15 million? Absolutely. So I can see both sides of it, just making a comment on it. And I think it's something that should be looked at.
No, certainly. And, Coach, one of the, I guess the unique situation, not unique, but we see kind of this stuff happen fairly often. Nickell Robey was a junior. He ended up leaving school early and wasn't drafted. Now, you know, signed with a team and everything. But what about in situations like that? What do you think about those?
Well, I think that's part of the process as far as a young man having to make a decision and getting false advice or doing something emotionally. They came off a season that wasn't very good. I have a feeling that it was an emotional decision. I don't want to be here anymore. I'm not happy, blah, blah, blah. We went 7-6. I think you got to sit down with this kid, someone and that he respects, and talk to him and say, you know, this isn't a smart thing to do, but you can't stop him. But he went on, and you use this as examples to other players before they move on. People get hurt in making emotional decisions like this. He's not the only one. There's a lot of them that went out, not only just at SC, at a lot of universities that didn't get drafted that are out there doing free agency. So these are things that are part of athletics today, and I think they should be dealt with differently, and I agree with this gentleman 100% as far as coaches leaving. And maybe if you're a freshman when a coach leaves, you should be given that option that if you want to leave the university, if you don't like who the new head coach has been named, you have the opportunity to be a free agent. You can stay, but also you could go too.
All right, well, let's move on to some other questions. Melvin wanted to know, why do you think George Farmer has why has George Farmer not played well enough in games or practices to not get significant playing time? What do you think about that, Coach?
Well, first of all, I think he's had great competition. Secondly, he's had injury problems. This spring, he had a great spring and then was injured again. I think it's, again, timing, being in the right place at the right time with the right attitude, maturing. Maybe when he came out of high school, he was more mature than a lot of the other kids. I've had that happen. And other kids catch up to you. And all of a sudden, your great athletic ability is now equalized because other kids have come up and matured and worked hard and given that extra effort that they have passed you by. We don't know the entire situation as far as off the field, on the field, the issues, the play calling, the correct routes that are called. Do you make the right reads? We don't know those issues. At least I don't. I think he's a fabulous athlete. I think he's got the ability to play in the NFL. He would have been the, I think, third receiver for sure in the spring, but he injured himself. He's got, what, 2 more years coming back. I think the number one thing he has to overcome is his injury problem, because that's going to be looked at very strongly, too, by the NFL. Now, on the positive side, he should be a college graduate. He should graduate. He should get all his classwork done, maybe even graduate early. We can go and get an advanced degree. So you got to look at the positives and the negatives. I've had great athletes come out of high school, come to the college level, and never get any better because they matured earlier. They were playing at a rate where they were just bigger, stronger, and faster than kids that were the same age they were as seniors in high school. Or they were redshirted in kindergarten. Now, a lot of parents today redshirt their kids. I call it redshirted, where they don't put them in kindergarten until they're six years old. What is the rush? They're more mature. They become leaders in the school. They're better athletes. They have all this going along where they're going to be a little bit more mature. They're going to be the leader rather than the follower, especially if they're a little bit smaller. But this is things that people do, and then all of a sudden when the other kids catch up with this athlete, then it sort of equalizes everything, and you have to look at the whole situation. But I think George Farmer is a great athlete. I think he should be playing. It's too bad about the injury situation, but I think, too, he's got to focus, get himself ready to play, and he can't blame anybody but himself. Who can he blame? He's had these injuries problems, and he's got to overcome them.
Good stuff there. We'll see what happens. George Farmer did have surgery a few days ago, so he's working on his recovery right now. We'll follow him, but he definitely will be out for the year. JJB had a question, Coach, and I don't know if we've talked about this before, but this is something I certainly noticed kind of happens with this USC program for some reason. He said Pete Carroll would let the quarterbacks battle it out in the spring and the fall, but by the first game, he would pick a starter and stick with them throughout the season. Is there any chance that Lane Kiffin might take a different course and put a QB in if the starter is not moving the team like he should have done against Georgia Tech, or do you think he's a Pete Carroll clone? And I think he has a good point here, Coach. It seems like at USC over the years, even when, you know, successful teams, whatever, it seems like a huge reluctance to ever take out the starter or replace the starter, no matter what. It just seems like once a starter's picked, it's like set in stone.
Well, I tell you, you have to be mature, and your timing and your evaluation process has to be right on. You've got to have the fortitude. You got to have the guts to make that change. I've had to make that change twice in my life, and I'll give you an example. We were playing for junior college championship in against College of Sequoias in Visalia. One year when I was a head coach at Pasadena City College, and at halftime, we're down, I forget, 20-6 to the College of Sequoias. And the quarterback that started for us, we're undefeated, they're undefeated, was the sports editor's son at the Pasadena Star News. At halftime, I talked with my quarterback coach, and I said, hey, we got to make a change. This isn't happening. He's off. We got to make a change. And the quarterback coach told me, he says, Coach, if we don't win this football game, you can imagine the headlines tomorrow. I said, yeah, we can imagine the headlines tomorrow, but we got to make a change because this is our job to coach this football team. We're not going to have a reporter coach this football team. We made the change. Janae Wallace came in, threw a couple of touchdown passes. Our running game got going, and we won the game. After the game, of course, I had to be interviewed by this guy and talk about it, and he asked me, why did I make this change? I said, because we weren't producing. We had to make a change. We had to do something to stimulate our football team. If we'd have gone along with the same quarterback at the same time, our team would not have looked forward to the second half because we weren't playing with a damn. So the next situation was when I was at UNLV. My first game against UNLV, we put on national television against BYU. Steve Young was the quarterback. The year before it was Jim McMahon, and we'd beaten him, UNLV had beaten him. And I didn't know anything about Steve Young. And Steve White was a quarterback that was returning at UNLV, along with a couple of other quarterbacks. And we got beat 29-0. Now, it's been a long time since I've been shut out. I went back. We had 10 days to prepare for our second game. And I told our team, I told our quarterbacks, I said, I want you to know we're opening up the quarterback position. There isn't a quarterback. We don't get shut out. We're going to find out now if it is the same guy. Okay, it's the same guy. And we opened it up. And I remember Randall Cunningham coming in my office and saying, Coach, are you serious? You're going to open this up. I don't believe you. I said, Randall, if you're the best, you're going to start against New Mexico. So at the end of the 10-day period, I named Randall Cunningham as a starting quarterback. He never set the bench again. I think he threw for 450 yards at Albuquerque. And that's where Randall was born. But you got to do what you got to do. You got to sometimes make changes. You can't be afraid to make changes. You got to be able to back up your decisions because the kids know they need some motivation. They know what's going on in the huddle or the locker room or meetings. You got to be able to because that passes a message out to the whole team that no one's job is secure. Don't take it for granted. You're being evaluated on every play in every game. And the kids want the best kids to play, but they want to win too, not just us and the fans. So sometimes you got to step it up and you got to do it. Will Lane Kiffin do it? I don't know. We'll have to evaluate it when we watch the season. And if you listen to our podcasts or if you listen to me on radio, ESPN, I'll tell you the truth. You know, I always tell you the truth. Sometimes it's not the most popular thing to say, but I'll tell you the truth.
All right. Yeah, we're waiting to see, too. Obviously, it wasn't an encouraging sign if you want to see backup quarterbacks come in when it didn't happen in the bowl game. But we'll see. Once the new season starts, we got competition all spring, all fall. We'll definitely be paying attention to that this fall camp to see how that goes. We have some questions on Twitter, Coach. I know you're not on Twitter. You don't tweet or anything. But I asked, since you know we were away for a while, I put out on Twitter. So we have a few of those questions, if you don't mind answering those. Is that okay?
No, no.
All right. This is from Elijah Justin Lopez. He says, is USC's schedule strong enough to make a run at the title, going from 7-6 to a national title? What do you think, Coach?
Well, I'll tell you, anything's possible. I think that you got to play one game at a time. And I think you got to play up to your ability and the level, and you got to hope that when you play the games you're supposed to win, you win. And when you play against the other teams, you got to be good enough, and you got to be lucky enough, and you got to be injury-free enough, and you got to be able to perform to be able to win the close football games when teams are equal. You know, I used to say it's a business trip. There's some games we're just going to win. Whether we're ready to play or not, we just can't screw it up. We got to go out there. We've got better players than they got. We should be equally as good as coaches as the other opponent, but we got better players. So if we put our bigger X against your smaller O, then we should win. And I can go through the schedule and say, win, 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 maybe, tough game, we got to win this one. Either way, down, down, down. Now, SC's got the same situation, or any team in the country has to face the same type of decision-making. You got to get ready a little bit more than you do for some teams. And you can't be ready to play at the same emotional pace pitch every single week. When people say they do that, they're wrong and they shouldn't do that. Sometimes when you do that and you play a team that you're not supposed to beat and you just want to go in there, play your best, and get out, because if you get too ready to play and you mislead your team and you know you can't beat this team, and that's what I call body bag games. SC doesn't have body bag games, but some universities do. And you get ready to play thinking you're going to beat Clemson at Clemson, and you get beat, you come back the next week and you're so beat up and mentally beat up and depressed because you lost to the Tigers that you lose the next week to Utah State, a team you should have won or beaten. So, you know, part of preparing your football team is preparing it for what's realistic and what you should do with your ability of your football team. Now, when you're at USC, you play for a Pac-12 championship, you play for a national championship, nothing else is acceptable. There's about 10 programs in the country that I put into that category. And anything less than that, people are grumbled. People are wondering what happened. Now, what's happened in the Pac-12? People have caught up to USC. They got tired of USC beating them all every single year during the Pete Carroll era. So their athletics directors went out and got new coaches, built new facilities, remodeled their stadiums, did whatever they had to do to recruit the athlete away from USC so they could compete, put more money in their football program, paid their head coaches more money, did whatever it took, and it worked. Now you've got a Pac-12 that I can't really say that there's a gimme in the Pac-12 anymore. On any given day, anybody can beat anybody. Washington State's going to be a dangerous game at the Coliseum, the second game of the year. Colorado has a new coach. McGuire did a hell of a job at San Jose State. So, you know, all these teams are now getting better and better and better, and SC's got to get better and better and better, or they're not going to be able to compete. And you're starting to see what happened last year and losing some of those games to Arizona and those other teams.
That's true, Coach. We got a couple more. Let's see. Eric Garcia, with the new SEC ESPN network, do you feel like it's creating an unfair advantage?
No, I don't think it is. I think the SEC is smart. They're always ahead of everybody. They're always setting the level. They're always setting the pace with their marketing and everything they do. Then everybody copies them. I tell you, they make footballs important there. Athletics are important there. Everything's important down there in the Southeastern Conference. And, they set the tone. I can't criticize someone who's winning. And right now they'll compete in any area they can compete in. TV, marketing, recruiting, publications, anything. So you can't criticize them. You got to say, hell yes, they're the best. They're the toughest conference. It proves out to be the toughest conference. I'll be the first one to criticize their non-conference schedule. I think it's a joke. But they don't care what I think. They have successful programs. They're going to play who they have to play. If they don't have to travel far, why travel far? They got to play a team $800 million. Teams are getting million-dollar guarantees, more than that now, to play in the Southeastern Conference and other games. In fact, what they're doing now, some of these schools, are buying teams out as far as if you have a home and home. What they're doing is saying they're calling and saying, rather than us come out there to your university, you come to our university, we'll give you $1 million, or we'll give you $2 million. Then an AD figures this out with the money crunch. He says, hell, that's more money if I played him at home. I can't make that kind of money by playing him at home. Or they go to a neutral site. You see all this happening. Was money so important? So if the Southeastern Conference is outworking, outmarketing the other conferences, then that's great. You take the Pac-12, they can't even get on DirecTV. I mean, I'm critical on that because I have DirecTV, okay? And it's not funny to people who have DirecTV because you either have to go somewhere else if there's a road game or go to someone else's home and they can't get on DirecTV. Now, I think that's ridiculous because I would say I don't know how much of the market is DirecTV, but I know it's a big portion of it. And that makes you look small time to me. Do what you got to do to publicize your conference. And if it's give up a little bit, then give up some. But get on DirecTV and these other networks.
That makes sense, Coach. They're not Fios either, so never seen the Pac-12 network unless it was at a bar. So hopefully that'll change this year. We will see. But no amount of pressure really made a change last year. So we'll see what happens this year.
Well, I'm putting pressure on them.
I like it.
I'm going to tell you, I'm going to put pressure on them. And I even called a conference twice last year. And I asked them, I said, what is the deal here? Oh, well, we want at least what they're paying the Big Ten. They're not offering the same as they're paying the Big Ten and these other conferences. And they wanted the same.
Yeah.
And DirecTV said, we're not raising our prices of our subscribers. If you want to get on, this is what we'll give you. So maybe if everybody wanted to call them or call the Pac-12 office and complain about it, it probably would help. But, you know, I think that's something that's really lacking as far as the Pac-12 network.
Could not agree more. Well, we got one last one for you, Coach. It's from Lord Trojan. He says, when are they going to start teaching them how to play man corner instead of letting them flounder? They're using zone fundamentals. That's from Lord Church, I think he's talking about the cornerback situation.
Well, I think you're right. I think they use a combination of what both turning sideways and so on. And, you know, if you've been a secondary coach or you know, you stay bent over and you keep your eyes on the belt buckle and you play inside or outside shade, depending where the field is, or head up. You don't play head up very often. And you bump and run down on the goal line. You don't give them anything on the goal line. You're always uptight. You can't, you know, I've seen. Don't get me wrong, and see, I've seen defensive backs line up 5 yards deep and they're on the 1 yard line. All you do is pick up, throw the ball out there, and it's a touchdown. So, you know, I think you have to play with it. You have to believe in it. You don't teach anything else. You play man all the time. If you're going to play it, and you get the type of athletes that can play man, you can't take a guy that can't play man, that's not a great athlete, that runs 4.8, 4.9, even 4.7, and play man. Because the receivers today are all too fast, too big, too athletic. You just can't cover them. You're playing defensively rather than playing offensively on defense by saying, walking up on his nose and saying, you're going to catch a pass all day. I just ate garlic cloves all morning. You're going to smell my breath the entire game. And have that confidence in yourself. And you've got to be able to play man techniques. I didn't watch the teaching of the techniques this spring, but I know exactly what this question or whoever sent this question in means. It's meaning play man techniques. Play the field, backpedal, stay low, watch the belt buckle, turn, go to the football. Don't look back until the receiver looks back. Play man. Don't get duped. Play man. And we can go through all that some other time.
All right. Well, Coach, really appreciate you coming on the show after a brief hiatus, 1 week off. But it's good to talk some USC football. Thanks, everyone, for sending those questions in. And hope you had a good time. We really enjoyed having you on again.
Hey, I really enjoyed it, too. And I enjoy and appreciate all your questions. And, again, this is just my opinion on all this. And, again, too, I want to thank Southern California Ticket Service for their sponsorship, and it is a great spot to get your ticket to any event you want to go to. It doesn't even have to be a local event. It could be anywhere. And Ryan, I'm glad you're back home safely, and your secret assignment went well, and we'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good. Thanks, Coach, and everyone else. Back in 30 seconds, talking with USCFootball.com beat writer Dan Weber.
Meet us on the other side of the break for more of the Peristyle Podcast. Tickets, tickets, tickets. SC Tickets is your concert, sports, and theater ticket source. We have the tickets you need to any event worldwide. Football tickets are now available. Call SC Tickets now at 1-800-888-7287. 1-800-888-7287. That's 1-800-888-7287. Or visit us on the web at sctickets.com. SC Tickets, concerts, sports, and theater. We now return to the Peristyle Podcast and your host, Ryan Abraham.
We are back here on the Peristyle Podcast. As promised, USCFootball.com beat writer Dan Weber is joining the show. Dan, what's going on? How you doing?
Oh, great. Great to have you back. Sound good.
Yeah, a little jet lagged, but it's okay. Sorry for everyone for the week off, but we're back here with the Peristyle Podcast again. And apparently, Dan, I didn't leave during a very exciting time. I guess it's good timing on my part. The throwing sessions have kind of stopped off, but a bunch of the players did get to graduate. There was some cool pictures running out there about players that had graduated, and some guys are still going to be coming back. Maybe you want to share a few thoughts on that.
It is nice to see, guys like, John Martinez and, who's graduated, Deion Bailey, those guys that, have their diplomas and get to finish up in the fall. And it's always a really joyful, happy time with the parents. And it was neat for the third year in a row, kind of a big-time USC football player came back to get his degree. 2 years ago, it was Troy Polamalu. Last year, it was Justin Fargas. This year, it was Darnell Bing who left. He needed nine when he left early. He needed nine courses, and he's had an NFL career, I guess, Oakland, and finished up with Houston with the Texans, and he's back doing commercial real estate, and he's got a foundation in Lakewood for. Involving Down syndrome kids after his cousin, involving him in sports. So he's doing some nice thing, but he also picked up all the courses he needed to get his policy planning and development degree, and was really, really proud of it. So it was kind of nice to see those guys come back and pick up their degree.
Yeah, and you can actually see Dan put a nice column up there, free. You don't even have to be a subscriber for it, about Polydad, who's on the Peristyle, but John Martinez's dad, who's been been on the site for quite a while. We love him. He's always fun to talk to. But that was a nice piece. So if everyone, you can go to uscfootball.com and check that one out.
Yeah, and it's really neat, too. It broke just right because John Martinez's full brother, Kenny, Tafusi, who is a defensive tackle at Cal, as it worked out, he will get his degree at the end of the first semester. So Steve was, kind of worried that they might have to do two graduations in like 2 days, and get from Southern California to Northern California. So it's going to work out well that Kenny will get his after his senior season in the fall. So they'll be able to go up there, up to Berkeley, after the first semester and get go for his graduation ceremony. So that's really what a job, the Martinez's have done with those kids. They deserve, it's just, and no one has enjoyed it more and been a part of it more. I used to be, as a coach, I used to, high school coach, you would say that, when you get a good parent, it's hard. It's really hard to be a parent of a good athlete. It's just so many things you have to do right, and you want to be part of it, and you don't know exactly how. Steve Martinez is just absolutely, you can't be a better parent of an athlete than Steve Martinez. He just does it perfectly. He just, you know, if only there were a lot of Steve Martinez's in the world. He just, he really gets it. And now it shows. I mean, when you see see John and Kenny both, you know, getting degrees from USC and Cal, you just can't do it any better than that.
The it's great stuff there, so definitely check it out on uscfootball.com. So, you know, while this was going, while I was away off in Australia, the, you know, summers, the throwing sessions kind of ended briefly. They'll be coming back in a little bit because, you know, classes were ending, finals were starting up, and obviously graduation happened. So the semester's over, they'll start summer school and all that. So once they get back in the swing of things, we'll be able to see them kind of throw in these unofficial workouts again. But right now, during this kind of lull, the coaches are going on tour. So maybe you want to talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, I guess tonight they start in Orange County with, and it'll be the first chance for Andy Enfield to be out there. And so you've got, very often, like, the last couple of years, you'd go to one, and Bob Cantu would be the coach even before he was the coach in terms of representing basketball. John Robinson is usually, and I think he's going to be the MC again this year, and he does such a good job. He's as good at this as, I mean, he reminds you, you know, somebody ought to have a late night show or something. He just does that good a job. He's really become excellent at sort of being the, you know, the host, interviewer, moderator, what have you. But he really brings out, you know, the best in the coaches. And this is a perfect time of year, I think. Trying to remember, they go from Newport Beach tonight in the Balboa Bay Club to Manhattan Beach Marriott, I think, tomorrow. Side Golf Club at Pasadena on Thursday, and they end up in. It's just, you know, if you got a chance, it's fun. It's kind of an off the record. And it's a chance to do what we're doing. And we tried to do a little bit last week, you know, on the on uscfootball.com, is basically take a look ahead. And this is the time of year where, you know, I know we last week we took a look ahead at how does the coaching look like it's going to break and all that. This is the time of year for, you know, taking a step back and, you know, where there isn't so much news. And for USC, that's really unusual because USC, we just, you know, every year you're here, every day you're here, you think, how much more news can anybody generate than USC does? But this is the kind of time of year that they're, you know, you got a chance to, you know, catch your breath and take a look and say, well, I wonder, and that's what we've been doing a little bit. And this will give you a chance to do that again this week. And I know some of the guys probably on the P, you know, for us, I mean, if you go, it's still, the agreement is, it's kind of off the record. We can talk to the coaches before and after. We can talk to, you know, the people who are there. But usually somebody on the P will actually kind of, you know, go ahead and kind of take notes and maybe let us in on exactly what was said, or, you know, kind of paraphrase what's said. And that's always good. So we don't get a chance to be reporters because we tell them we're just here to you know, talk to everybody. I would say that, you know, this will be a good week for that. You know, where you can say, you know, can this team, how do they match up? How do they, you know, have they figured out all the things that went wrong last year? Have they taken, after watching, you know, Stanford do it and UCLA do it and Texas A&M do it and Oregon do it? I know there's still people who say, you can't win with a brand-new quarterback. Yeah, you probably can. that kind of stuff, you know, just kind of thinking about, you know, what – and then looking at the schedule. It's kind of a – breaks pretty well. Not, you know, for 13-game schedule and you get a trip to Hawaii and, you know, I think it – you know where the trap games are. It's not like they're necessarily going to, you know – you know how tough it could, you know, it could be the night after Halloween in Corvallis, Oregon. I mean, that's hopefully that's not going to be a surprise to anybody, or you know how tough the first road game in the Pac-12 in Tempe at the end of September, how tough that's going to be. Yeah, it's going to be hot and tough, and everybody remembers what happened last time. Same with Corvallis. Everybody remembers the last trip to Corvallis, so or the trip before that, or the trip before that. It's not hard to forget. So, but this is the time of year you get to do a little bit of that, and playing out your schedule and where you're going to be and where you think USC is going to be.
Well, one of the guys, I don't think he's going to be on the coaches tour, but someone that you kind of shared some knowledge before we got on the show, USC Athletic Director Pat Hayden, you shared some very interesting information that I did not know. I guess it came out while I was away. Maybe you want to talk about that a little bit.
Well, USA Today, and you know, it's available, even for the private schools, the salary information is available on the IRS Form 990, which, you know, all tax-exempt institutions have to fill out, and they have to list their five highest salaried employees. And Pat made the list for, I guess, the year ending in 2012 at $2.2 million, highest paid.
Woo.
And it may include deferred compensation, other kind of stuff. I don't think we're ever going to know all the details, but that put him as the highest paid athletic director in the country, who's specifically an athletic director. The Vanderbilt, now Vanderbilt has a really weird situation. They don't have a separate athletic department. They have an athletic department that's like part of the school's academic department, and the guy who runs it is also a university vice chancellor or vice chancellor for university relations, and he's also a tenured law professor. So he's like getting three AD, you know, all three of those jobs. So he ends up over $3 million, the guy at Vanderbilt. I think his name is David Williams, maybe. But other than that, Pat is pretty much in a place by himself. He's at $2.2 million. I think the fella, Mal Moore, at Alabama, who died in March, but, you know, long-time, well-respected athletic director at Alabama, he was making $600,000 a year. So just for comparison. one would say is, wow, that's a reflection of how much USC values its athletic program, and when you're paying that kind of money, it probably means you expect it to really reflect that kind of those kinds of resources that you're putting into you know, the people that are running your athletic program. But, you know, we'll see. I think between Pat and Monty Kiffin, that was $4 million.
Wow.
And throw in Kevin O'Neill and you're up to 5.7. So how did 2012, I don't know. How did that, you know. We're trying to, you know, come up with a little bit of a take on the way that could be a good thing and doesn't necessarily have to be, but just kind of interesting that, I think I was kind of, and I know, you know, UCLA's athletic director, Dan Guerrero, and I kind of kidded him about, he's up, you know, well over 700 and some thousand dollars a year, you know, wow, that's, you know, good deal, you know, because he was the, living out here in Orange County, he was the athletic director at UC Irvine. And he, you know, went back to his alma mater and has done really well for himself. And I thought, wow, Pat's getting three times as much as Dan. So I guess if you get in those arguments with your buddies from UCLA, you can really put them down now.
Well, you did get, you know, four Petes in like tennis and men's water polo national championships, but as far as like ratio of performance to salary, I don't know if there'd be a worse one in the country when you're talking about, you know, Monty Kiffin making over $1 million and Kevin O'Neill making 1.7 or something like that. I mean, that's That's a lot of money going out for not a whole lot of results on the field or the court.
Yeah, I know. I mean, when you want to say, hey, we're number one, you really you don't want the other people snickering at you when you're talking about, putting out that kind of money. You want to be able to put it out and say that, you know, in a very proud way. Hey, you know, we really, you know, we believe the importance, and we're going to back it up with, I would think, you know, at that kind of money, you really do have to have the best athletic department in the country. And I think that's a challenge. I think we'll see. You know, you really do have to, you know, if you say we've got the best student athletic, you know, academic services operation, you really have to figure out how to make it that, not just say it's that. Same with the food services, you know, and all of that. I think the challenge is there. I mean, if you're saying, boy, we are going to invest this kind of money into the people running this program, then this program's really got to be right there with the resources that you've invested in it. And you put in the most money of anybody in the country at the top. I think the students ought to reflect that. You know, I don't think, you know, for example, and I know that I think they really are fighting for Abe Markowitz with the NCAA, but it really wouldn't reflect well if at the one end you're putting that kind of effort and resource, and at the other end, you know, kids like Abe Markowitz are having to drop off, or a kid like Kylie Fitz, there's no place for him at the last minute because people that you expected to graduate didn't make it. And, you know, it's all got to work together. And maybe it hasn't, you know, worked together all that well over the last year. And one of the other things is maybe you develop a little bit of a strategy to combat the completely over-the-top and outrageous, and now we know so much more about it, NCAA penalties that, are hitting USC with, you know, the unprecedented, never before in history has anybody been forced to go 3 straight seasons with 75 scholarships. And one would have might have liked to have seen a strategy developed for ameliorating, you know, those penalties. And now that it's obvious to everybody in the country how far out of, out of the ballpark those things were and how wrong they were. And I would think not a person on that committee on infractions for USC right now would be able to defend those. And one would have wished that by now USC would have figured out a way to have made an attempt to try to get those, adjusted to some extent. And maybe in the, you know, Ed Markowitz case, we're seeing that USC is at least battling for his right to finish out his college career at USC, something he certainly deserves to do and not have to be. In order to finish his 6 year, he's got to go find somebody else that's willing to take him here at the last minute.
Yeah, agreed, Dan. We'll see what what happens with that, the Abe Markowitz situation. But good stuff there. And we have a couple questions if we can get them in real quick before we let you go. Tarian wrote in, and he said, Dan, I'm surprised to not see more competition for Andre Walker's left tackle position. How do you feel about the situation at left tackle at this point?
I think you're right. I'm surprised too. Interesting. I think it's been, you know, last year and this year, that's been the most, it's been the position we just haven't been able to figure out what are they trying to do. I mean, they gave it to him last year, basically, after 3 weeks of being hurt in August. And that was a disaster. He wasn't ready to play there. And it kind of set the tone for an offensive line that wasn't ready to play. Now, you know, he had his moments and, you know, kind of Andre, you know, he's impossible not to like. There are times you kind of wish he was focused a little bit more. And you think he's not the perfect left tackle, not that they have anybody who's, you know, and this is the problem after, you know, Matt Khalil, it's hard to have somebody that you think, you know, is the perfect guy to play there after Anthony, you know, Munoz, who maybe, you know, the best left tackle in the history of, you know, football. So I wish I could give you a little more insight into exactly how that, you know, position is going. It's interesting that they created the competition at right tackle, you know, with that's a really good question, and probably something we need to ask Coach Summers about when we get a chance to sit down with him this summer, as to exactly what, you know, what the game plan is there. But I think you're right about that competition at left tackle. I think Nathan Gertler is probably, you know, a guy that you could definitely plug in. And, you know, for a walk-on, you can't expect possibly in any way at any program in the country to have anybody better as a, you know, as a walk-on kid who you could plug in there. But it's interesting that, you know, so much of the young talent, the, you know, the Jordan Simmons, Zach Banner, they're all on the right side. And don't know. It's a good question and something we really need to pay attention to.
Let's see. We got a few Twitter questions, too. I asked for some Twitter questions, so we'll do a quick couple of those. At TitanTroy86 wants to know, who is the most surprising player, you think, from spring football? Interesting. Yeah, I'm trying to think.
That is a good question. I mean, I think Kessler, you know, considering he kind of got, you know, not, you know, what he went from the backup a year ago to not the backup this year, and there was kind of a, you know, a sense of maybe he hadn't gotten a fair shot. His ability to kind of step in and sort of take over that position in a lot of ways, you know, partly because of, you know, Max Wittig's injury that knocked him out for a couple of weeks. But that was, I don't know if you'd say surprising, but it was kind of eye-opening that he had that ability. I think Justin Davis' ability to, you know, really just fit in the way he did. I mean, he just totally seemed to get it. Now, for running backs who do get it, you know, there isn't a big adjustment period. It's pretty much, you know, a lot of that you do by, you know, by feel, and a lot of that you do by just being ready. I'm trying to think anybody else that would really jump out at you. I think those two would be maybe more than anybody, just their, where they ended up, where they, basically where they were the entire spring. It was just, wow, okay. I mean, I think, you know, we were, Trey Madden's just how far back he is and how he was able to do more than I think we thought he would. I think that was a really good sign. And we just didn't know, and I don't think they knew until they saw him, they saw him out there. And if you want to throw in one more, I guess Marcus Martin's ability switching over to center and kind of looking more natural at center almost than he, you know, did at guard, and feeling more at home at center. I mean, he just, it looked like he just, wow, this is something, I love doing this. This is great. That isn't always the case with center. I mean, you got all kinds of things to do and think about and, you know, mechanically, and changes your steps and all that. And he just seemed to welcome it, that this, boy, this is my home. I, you know, why didn't I find this sooner? You know, that kind of thing. So, if only now we're waiting for somebody, you know, probably, I was thinking about the secondary too. It, just watching Sua Craven step in there, you know, a little over not quite 6'1", I don't know, 220 pounds, and looking like an NFL safety, 17 years old, and in the body of an NFL safety, or a body of the NFL safety which he had, and just his ability to make plays the way he does. He moves silently, kind of, you know, smoothly, quietly, but then he has that violent result, you know, at collision. Whereas so many of the great USC, you know, secondary guys, the Ronnie Lotts and Troy Polamalu's, when they were coming, you knew they were coming, and you knew they were going to deliver a blow, and you could hear them coming. And Sua's different. Sua kind of, you know, like he's one, like an electric car or something. You just get in there, you know, quietly, and then he delivers the blow. But he's really impressive, kid. He just has that look about him of something, you know, something special. So And getting to see him in person, I think. And, you know, in video, on TV, it's one thing. But watching him in person, he's a really impressive kid.
Jared Still, our buddy, wanted to know. He's down in Texas. He said, I've been wondering since reading it, when Dan says that you all think they'll get the QB position right, what who does that mean?
You know, I'm not coaching them, and I'm not, you know. And one of the things that you don't want to do is you don't want to get so involved that, you know, it looks like you're pushing somebody. You really, went over another one or whatever. I think it's worked really well, the three-man competition. I think just in terms of knowing the offense, comfort level in the huddle, the look that you get from, you know, the guy calling the plays and the guy that's going to handle the ball on every play, the ability to extend plays, the ability to maybe see most of the field, the ability to, you know, tuck the ball in and, you know, take 5 yards if that's the only thing available, and a feeling of, you know, not trying to do everything with your arm. It leans toward Cody. It would seem to lean toward Cody Kessler, just from a lot of those different things. And you don't want to say, Max got a really tough deal with getting hurt in that kick blocking drill where he was a holder and knocked out for a couple of weeks when he would have had a chance to, you know, because he got thrown in there. In the end of the UCLA game, the Notre Dame game, and then the Sun Bowl, no relief. I mean, here's this kid. It was like a starting pitcher that, you know, had already given up 12 runs in the, you know, fourth inning, and they didn't take him out. And it's not been a good deal, you know, for Max. He's not had, you know, the best of, you know, opportunities in some ways. And he's got, I know when Ryan put that head cam on him the other day at throwing session, the power in his arm. I mean, when he throws the ball, you know, past that camera, and this is a guy you wonder if he picked up the javelin, could be an Olympic javelin thrower. I mean, there may not be a stronger arm in the country, playing college football. In terms of who's the most ready, I think if the competition goes the way it's been going and it's allowed to go, and Max Brown has done a wonderful job. I mean, he's, you know, from the beginning of spring to the end of spring, he's getting everything out of every practice that he's supposed to get. And he knows what he needs to do. And he's right there. You know, not necessarily as a starter, but as a guy who could be, if he had to be, in a pinch, absolutely. He's come that far and still needs, physical, developing and all that. But I thought they handled the way they handled the quarterback situation in the spring really well. And that's a good thing. And I don't think it'll be one of those, well, we're picking the guy with a strong arm, because if Marquise Lee and Nelson Aguilar run really far, really fast, he can throw the ball, the farthest in the, that was sort of the excuse, you got. Well, we really like him. He's got that big arm. Like, how often do they throw that pass? The ideal thing with those guys is to hit them, 20, 25 yards downfield, let them run it the rest of the way. But you got to throw it accurately. You got to throw it to the right guy at the right time. Based on the criteria they've set up, probably Cody, certainly has the inside track, it would seem, at this point in time.
Now, one last one, Dan. This is from Big E on Twitter. He said, last year's sanctions, how quick can SC get back to full strength and have a full roster of scholarship players?
Well, they're going to have, guesstimated 69 this fall, and they can recruit 20. And they lose the senior whose number escapes me at this point in time. They can't get back next year. Can they get back in the second year? Probably not quite. I mean, I don't know. Can they sign 33? Like, who signed 33? Georgia signed 33 this year? I'm not sure. USC could probably, you know, finesse that quite as much. I mean, they did a heck of a job getting the early entry kids in that they did, but there might not be as much, which is, again, a reason why USC really ought to be pounding on the NCAA for those emails, pounding on the NCAA for transparency, pounding on the NCAA to adjust the penalties. It's just so outrageous that USC has sat back. You know, okay, now they finally, they pushed it a little bit in the spring, and after 2 years after we suggested they do it, they allowed, you know, fans to watch from the baseball stadium. Big whoop. Okay, that's great. That's a start. That should have happened year one, not year three.
Yeah.
Same way with the scholarship thing. There is no way USC should have ever accepted that. And this is not a comment that they should have sued anybody or should have gone to court or done any of that. No. Uh-uh. But there were ways. USC could have worked the system. USC could have done things that would have made the powers that be at the NCAA uncomfortable. They could have. They chose not to. I mean, Missy Conboy at Notre Dame ought to have to feel uncomfortable every day of her life for signing off on those penalties. And there ought to be ways that USC could drop little hints, little places about how Notre Dame basically, you know, participated in a raid against its top rival in a ways that were really unfair, and conducted as she as a member of the Committee on Infractions was part of a group that conducted itself in a pretty lawless way, in a way that where the emails show now that they violated their own rules, they lied about it, and now they don't want anybody to know about it. Well, why hasn't USC tried to put that out there and put it out there and put it out there? Why haven't they thought about intervening, for example, in the appellate procedure and saying, you know, Judge, you said that, you know, it's the public has a right to know here. These are part of the court, file now, which makes them a part of the public file. And, but that it's okay to hold, there's no real harm being done. If we wait before we release them until the appellate, process goes through. What if USC said, you know what, there is harm being done. We're being, required to, conduct football at USC at one of the three schools that's never played down in its schedule, never played an opponent other than a Division I opponent. And we have these commitments, and we're having to do it with fewer players, 16 fewer than most schools will have on scholarship starting in the fall. And if that's unfair to our players. It's not almost safe. And, we want some redress here, and we want to know, what did the NCAA do? How much did they know about how much they were violating the rules? And what can we do about this in order to make this right? And why should our players, why should innocent kids that were in grade school have to lose scholarships, have to be told to go somewhere else when maybe if those emails, and all the things that the NCAA did during the USC case, become public, just as in the Shabazz Muhammad case, as soon as that became public, how, the NCAA was trying to railroad, UCLA's freshman, he immediately became eligible. Okay, well, maybe that kind of thing has to happen with USC, but UCLA fought it. Iowa State fought it. North Carolina fought it. North Carolina fought 20 years and thousands of courses of bogus courses that athletes were taking. They didn't even have to go to school. And the NCAA said, no big whoopee. Big deal. We'll let it go. But no, we won't let those, tennis calls back to Romania. Oh, no, that makes it a major infraction. I just think, that's the kind of thing. I think USC should have figured out a policy other than saying things like, we're going to win the right way now. Winning the right way would have been going after in any way you could. And when the NCAA gives you an opportunity, when, you know, when thank to Todd McNair's, you know, toughness and unwillingness to give up, and thanks to his, you know, lawyers who set a kind of set a trap for the NCAA, where the NCAA had to allow discovery and for those emails to come out, you know, here's a, the USC didn't have to do anything. Yes, he could have sat on the sidelines, but they could have gotten involved now, somehow, some way. If it's no more than just, you know, a press conference to talk about it, something to say that this isn't right, and what was done to our kids, to our school, to our reputation, that wasn't right, and we're not going to accept it. But, you know, I know that's I mean, I know we said this 2 years ago, and a lot of people were saying, ah, forget about it, Todd McNair doesn't have a chance, blah, 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 you know. Well, looks like he does. They're in an awfully good place as far as Todd McNair is concerned. Well, one would think that since it was so important for the NCAA to tie Todd McNair to the case in order to be able to nail USC, the fact that Todd McNair is where he is now with his case and the NCAA is where they are, why isn't that benefiting USC to any extent? That's the question.
It certainly is, Dan. All right, well, we're going to wrap it up for this week. But thanks again for coming on the show. Appreciate it. We're, you know, no more weeks off for a while. I'll be around. So we'll keep going with the show. Send in your questions, podcast@uscfootball.com. And thanks again, Dan.
I enjoyed it. Thank you, Ryan.
All right. And everyone else, thank you very much for tuning into the Peristyle Podcast. We'll talk to you all next week.
You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast presented by USCFootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. And don't forget, you can automatically download the podcast directly to your iPod or MP3 player for free. Just click the iTunes link on PeristylePodcast.com or search for Peristyle Podcast at the iTunes Music Store.